Good evening. It's May 9th, 2011. You're listening to KRXA 540, and this is Bob Oliver with The Quantum Leap. My guest this evening is an author. We get to do a book review here. She is Rebecca Fisher. Rebecca Fisher graduated with a BA in English and an MS in Education and teaches high school English currently in Southern California. And she will be with us in just a moment.
Everybody asks why I started at the end and worked back to the beginning. The reason is simple. I couldn't understand the beginning until I had reached the end.
I think many authors feel that way. Rebecca, how are you doing this evening?
Great, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. I've enjoyed the book so far. I'm into it about 50 pages, and the subject matter in your book, it's a novel. It in some ways has some experiences in your life, but you have developed quite a good characterization of the people in your novel, and the subject matter gets explained in a rather unusual place. Most of the setting is in a mortuary, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit first about who you are. Maybe give us a little history of what prompted you to write this novel.
Well, I was actually sitting in a creative writing class working on a short story for credit for class, and I just had this story kind of hanging out in my head, and it was this scene of driving on the streets of the suburbs of San Francisco and kind of my leaving this volatile marriage and not sure where I was headed. And so I started with that, and a few years later I finally got the time to sit down and really spell it all out.
Now, the title of the book is All the Wrong Places, and you can find it in major bookstores. Also, you can go to the website that you have set up for the book at RebeccaFisherBooks.com, and Fisher is F-I-S-H-E-R. And I guess you can get this in a e-book also, is that correct?
Yes.
I thought that's a very good way to get it out there for people. I think I saw it priced at about $7.99.
Yeah.
Now,
good deal.
Pardon me?
The e-books are a good deal.
They really are, yeah. I have a friend, Bruce, who does a lot of buying of the e-books. I find that's an exceptionally good way to keep the pricing down.
Yeah.
The setting in San Francisco, now this is kind of where you experienced a lot of what you write about, but you've changed the names, and you're basically creating a novel that has some of the experiences that all of us go through, but in a setting that's a little bit more familiar to you. That's an interesting way to write a novel, I suspect. How did you put it all together to where you could write a novel? I mean, that's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. It actually, when I finally sat down to do it, it took me a few months to get it all out, and then, you know, I just kept revising it. But you know, I think a lot of authors write what they know. It makes it not only easier, but, you know, truer. And these are all experiences I had and situations I knew well. So I think putting them into fictional characters or changing the names of places helped me distance myself a little bit from it to kind of gain perspective. And, you know, with most fictional characters, they end up telling their own story, but I tried to weave mine throughout.
Well, I found that you use a lot of colorful descriptive language in it. There's lots of adjectives to help build the characterization and just give the a beautiful detail to what these people are experiencing. So I often relate to a book that I read back, I guess it was about 24, and that was Gift of the Sea by Anne Lynn Lindbergh Marles, or Marles Lindbergh. And I felt that there was a certain aspect of her writing and yours that combined is your writing.
Wow.
Have you ever read her?
I haven't. I'm going to have to look that up now.
I'm a little tongue-tied here. and it mainly comes from not reading the entire book this far. What I have read, again, I really enjoy it. I like your style. From the research that I've done, I've only found 5-star ratings on your book. Everyone seems to love it.
Good.
So that's here's a couple of the reviews, if I might just read these for people.
Sure.
A very compelling human story. I just wanted to read it from start to finish without pause, and I agree with that. It renews your faith in humankind and the power of the human spirit. If you love the twists and turns of the human journey, you will love this book. And I found that to be true. But again, the colorful language that you use, I remember the little girl Maddie, who is in a sense your daughter.
Right.
Where she, in the very beginning of the book, she's playing with a snail, and she's trying to help the snail get across the path so it doesn't get stepped on. So she's kind of working the snail a little bit and talking to it and letting it know that everything's okay and everything will be okay. And she kind of picks it up and pushes it along, kind of like you'd play with a doll, very carefully. And then in the next moment, the adult, the mother, who, let's see, her name is Casey Wheeler, I believe.
Right.
Then she's at a point where she's trying to accomplish something and kind of move forward, but is having a hard time pressing a doorbell, of all things. So here comes this little 5-year-old girl who's just finished with the snail and is looking at Casey is trying to do and push the doorbell and sees that mom needs a little help. So she just goes over there and pushes it 4 or 5 times and sets mom off on her next set of fears, where there is no fear in a child.
Right. No, I've definitely learned a lot from my daughter. They're like little mirrors, you know, watching ourselves. So, yeah.
So go ahead and tell us, set us up for the storyline in the book.
Okay, well, like you had mentioned, the story follows a character named Casey Wheeler, and she really embodies many of my experiences, starting out with leaving this volatile marriage and reaching out to all she has left, which is her parents, and that kind of, that door closes on her as well, and she's left to kind of head out, not knowing where to go, just taking that first step out into the unknown, and it unfolds from there.
I'd say there's a lot of proud people in the beginning of this, and they don't know how to interact with one another. And that Casey is trying to go to her parents for some help. And in the past, we've always experienced, at least in my terms growing up, it was called the generation gap. And trying to ask for help when the help that's being offered isn't what you're asking for.
Right. It's conditional.
Always.
Yeah, that's what she faces. And the conditions are just unbearable for her. It involves essentially getting rid of her daughter, so it's not something she can accept.
And she's about 25, that her daughter's about 5 years old at this time.
Yeah.
So she doesn't accept the proposition that her father offers her to help her get out of the mess that she has created in her life and theirs.
Right.
And so there's all that going on. So what happens next?
Well, like I said, she takes that first step out and into the unknown. She's kind of driving, trying to figure out what she's going to do next. And fate, if you can call it that, steps in, and she crashes her car. and goes up to the building above the hill she's on and to ask for help, and it turns out to be a mortuary, which is
and she wasn't even dying to get in, was she?
Right. No.
One of the points that you made at about that transition was how she had nothing, including a credit card that worked.
Right.
And certainly in today's age, without having that credit line to back you up, it's a very, very difficult world. I was going to play Annie to start the show with.
Yeah, it's very, your options are really limited these days if you only have $60 in your wallet.
So she's at the mortuary, and she meets this the head of the mortuary. Seems like a pretty nice fellow in your in your story, in your book.
Yeah, he tends to be everyone's favorite character.
And let's see, what his name is...
Merman.
Merman.
Merman, yes.
So he kind of takes her in, and I guess I haven't gotten this part, but I guess he gives her a job, and she kind of settles in there, huh?
It comes to that eventually. He starts off by taking pity on her and her daughter and allowing her to stay, something she's a little horrified by, the fact that there's actually a place to live in this funeral home. But she has no intention of staying. It just turns out that that's where life is going to lead her back to.
None of us had any intentions of anything, did we?
Exactly, no.
And she's rather horrified, I think, at the prospects of staying the very first night. They're in wet clothing. It's been storming. They've wrecked their car. They've been out in the storm. They come across the mortuary. And now here's a man that's offering them clothes.
Right.
They used to be on dead people. What a way to start the night.
Right. Yes.
I really enjoy your writing and all of the little twists and turns that you put in there.
Well, thank you. It was fun to write it.
So how does it develop from there? Because that's as far as I've got. Now you can be the storyteller and however you want to handle this. I know we all have to read the book. But
right. I do want to leave some things to the reader. But, she has to figure out how to, first of all, survive in this new environment, which for those who, have only been to a mortuary for a service for family or friends, the idea of staying there much past that is quite horrifying, and the realities of mortuary are pretty gruesome, actually. So she has to adapt to that, and I kind of explain how that can become just matter-of-fact everyday life for people who work in it. So she's trying to navigate that, and at the same time she has a husband who is abusive and controlling and isn't going to let her go that easily. So he's pursuing her and uses the court system to do it to begin with. So she has to navigate a divorce and custody battle, as well as figuring out life in a mortuary. And it gets pretty, pretty thrilling and exciting.
Now people would ask, well, how would you write about something like this? How would you know how to write about something like this?
Well, again, I did live in a mortuary, and I did participate in, a lot of, even though I wasn't an employee technically, I did help after hours with a lot of the duties that need to be done there. And so I definitely added those details from my experience. And I, too, also went through a divorce. It was pretty hostile at times, and a custody battle that was pretty heartbreaking.
Mm. Well, on a softer note, a question that I've always wanted to ask is that do dead bodies roll off of tables, or is that only live bodies?
I've never seen one roll off a table, but my experience is small compared to others.
I remember the dog, the family pet dog that I ran over, and I saw that the kind of front end of the car was kind of up in the air, and I was wondering, what the heck am I running over? And I got out and looked, and there's the front wheel right on top of the dog, and the dog's eyes are kind of bulging, and I, for just a moment there, I thought I could read the dog's mind. Get this car off me! And so I went back, got in the car, and I decided I was now at a real quandary. Should I go forward or should I just roll completely over him? And I decided that that maybe I didn't want to do damage to the entirety of the dog and just to roll back forward. And when I got back to the dog, he was a little flat there, but I took him to the vet, and this particular vet, and I won't mention names, they put him up on the table, and then they wanted me to fill out all these papers. And I said, well, can't you look at the dog first? He said, no, fill out these papers. Right. Well, the dog rolled off the table twice while they were trying to get me to fill out these papers after being run over by a car. And it turned out okay, at least up to that point, in that they called me about 2 hours later, and they said, well, come get him. It doesn't seem to be anything the matter with him.
Wow.
So I guess I made a good choice in not rolling him over completely.
Sounds like it. Well, the dead bodies stay pretty still for you.
Okay. So, well, that answers my question.
Yeah.
All right, carry on. What's the next major aspect of what are you trying to teach us in this book? Anything, or is it just a fun book?
Well, it's definitely a fun book. I wrote it to entertain in part, but, you know, I've just had so many extraordinary experiences, and I wanted to share those experiences, especially the struggles of being a single mother. There are millions of single mothers out there right now, and you know, almost a third of the children in our country are raised by single mothers. So I know there's an audience out there, and I wanted to share the story to kind of reach out and give hope to single mothers who are just struggling to survive like I was.
So in a real sense, you, you're able to show them what these a myriad of all the wrong places and things can be. You cover the basic ones, I imagine. And when you were dealing with your custody battle, mm-hmm. what kinds of things would you encourage young mothers to do that maybe they should do, or that you didn't do, or
wow, having gone through this, it's never easy. If you really can't work something out with your partner or your spouse, the courts are kind of the last ditch effort to make things to work things out. It's really not the best choice, from my experience. You're kind of handing your life over to a stranger, and they're making these huge decisions without really knowing you or your children or your situation, and I don't think anybody's really left feeling very good about it. So I would say, if there's any opportunity to set aside personal differences and try to work together, I think that's always the better option. At the end of the day, I didn't really have that option. I was kind of forced into that, and it's just really terrifying. So I think the way I survived it was by building a community of support, people who could walk me through that, and people who had been through it before, certainly people who had done it before and could offer me suggestions and comfort, and people who just knew me and my daughter and were just there for us to hold our hands. And it would have been impossible to go through alone. So I would definitely say to find a support group and people who have been through it.
Well, it starts out in the book where you get the sense that this mother really has no friends, even, that she hasn't been able to create even a small support group. And so if that's the case, and following the book, and she does create a support group, was she also not having to kind of weed out the bad choices at the same time?
Yeah, she actually has begun to weed out the bad choices in the beginning, but she soon finds that they aren't people you can just walk away from. They're definitely relationships you have to face and kind of work through before you can walk away. I was very much alone for a while. The relationship was abusive, in a sense, alone by being alienated. I wasn't allowed to talk to my friends, see my friends. I was discouraged in seeing my family. So, you know, over time you start to kind of isolate yourself and you do end up alone. So that is really one of the hardest things I had gone through, was just being and feeling very alone. Luckily, I did stumble across people who had a lot of experience in what I was going through, and I just tried to embrace that and build some trust, which I wasn't used to having with people. But I did have to deal with those relationships, and I needed a lot of help doing it.
If you could hold on just a second, I've had a problem with our computer. It'll take me just a minute.
Sure.
Hopefully that will work. I don't know if we lost our internet clientele tonight or not, but
uh-oh.
It seemed to have a little glitch here. Let's see if... Well, we're still on the air, so we'll have
okay.
to go with that. Sorry. I think what I'm going to do is take us to a break right now.
Okay.
It's about that time. And check this equipment out, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Annie on Quantum Leap. Listening to KRXA 540. This is Bob Oliver with the Quantum Leap. Tonight's guest, Rebecca Fisher, author of All the Wrong Places. Tune in at 8 o'clock.
Everybody asks why I started at the end and worked back to the beginning. The reason is simple. I couldn't understand the beginning until I had reached the end.
Hello, I'm Solazar.
Hi, I'm Kirilani. In a year of limitless potential and possibilities, May brings us the vibrational frequency of creativity.
Transform the lead in your life into gold with Everyday Alchemy.
Good Vibrations Radio, your date on Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Good vibrations. Hey, this is Coach. I want to tell you about my friend Joe Klotz. He's a great plumber, and he cares so much about his business, Big Angelo's Plumbing and Water Heaters, that he named it after his son. Joe's a true professional who guarantees all repairs and installations for up to 10 years. Want to reduce your energy bills and go green? And who doesn't? Big Angelo's is a tankless water heater specialist. With a tankless water heater, you only heat the water you need when you need it. For any plumbing problem, call Big Angelo's Plumbing and your troubles will be over quickly, cleanly, and at a very reasonable price. The next time you have a leaky water or gas line, clogged drain, toilet problem, or need to upgrade pipes or your water heater, call Big Angelo's Plumbing at 831-658-0238. Big Angelo's provides free estimates and will beat any price quote for a comparable job.
This is Joe from Big Angelo's. I'd love to help you solve any plumbing problem.
For all your plumbing needs, call 658-0238 and check out Big Angelo's and its quality workmanship at Facebook.
In a galaxy far, far away, they didn't have any of the problems that we're going through. People on this planet still don't know what to do when they've locked themselves out of their car or home. You need to know about a brave, brave warrior, man who's already been on a starship, although they had to erase his mind afterward. Jim of Jim's American Lock and Key. High security keys, transponders, laser keys, remote rekeying. Lockouts. That's what he went up to the ship for. Changing locks. American Lock and Key. 1573 Del Monte Avenue in Seaside. Jim's back. Make your spares today. Call 899-3443. If Jim's a little disoriented, they may have taken him aboard the ship one more time. American Lock and Key, 1573 Del Monte Avenue in Seaside. I think I said that, didn't I? Well, that's right. I went with Jim. That's right.
You're listening to KRXA 540. This is Bob Oliver and the Quantum Leap. We've been having some problems with the computer here. We lost our internet, folks. I've had a couple of calls during the break, and the internet seems to be down. So sorry about that. We'll see if Hal can get that to work in here tomorrow. And my guest this evening is Rebecca Fisher, and we'll be right back with Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca.
Hey.
Sorry for all the problems tonight. Gosh, it's an interesting world we live in, isn't it, with all this electronic computer stuff? And
yes, it seems to fail at the worst times.
Yeah. Well, for some reason, the Quantum Leap seems to have that going on. Just about every time this program's on, we have a little interference like that.
Huh.
You know, I was telling you about some of the night vision work that we do.
Right.
And we have this Ed Grimsley on, who actually is a member of the Eisenhower family. So whenever I have problems, I always bring his name up, because he was taken off the air for like a minute and a half the first time I had him on.
Wow.
Let's see. We've got a caller. Let's see if we can take a caller here. Good evening. Hello. Who's this?
You're back up.
We are back up. Okay. Thanks, Bruce.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Good night.
All right. Well, you see, we get a little help in the most unlikely places at times. So I'm going to let you carry on. I really would like you to give out your information where you want people to contact you to get your book.
Okay. Well, you mentioned my website, RebeccaFisherBooks.com. There's information on there about me, my book. I have the first four chapters up there, actually, for you to read. And there are links to different sites to purchase the book. And
That's it. That's how you get a book these days.
That's it.
How are sales going?
Well, we're just getting started, so I think pretty good for just getting started.
Now, you elected to go through an agency that helps you to get book exposure. Yeah.
Right.
And that sounds like a pretty interesting way to go. Now, this is your first book, correct?
This is.
So this is all brand new experience.
Oh, yes. It's been quite a learning experience.
Are you writing a second book yet?
Well, I teach, so I'm hoping that this summer I'll have time to sit down and write it out. I have a lot of stories in my head, so I'm excited to sit down and keep working.
Now, I saw on the cover of your book that you you give some good credit mentions, and you have two brothers, is that correct?
I do have two brothers. One did the cover art, actually, which is beautiful. It kind of comes from a scene in the book, actually. And my other brother, who's my brother-in-law, he has set up my entire website and helps me out with that. So it's kind of a family affair right now.
Well, I think I'm going to mention this because you have another character in the book, and his name is Oliver.
Right.
And my name is Oliver, so I thought that was strange, Quantum Leap-ish.
Yes.
So he is a love interest, it turns out, in the book.
Right.
And what's his story in this? How does he fit into these all the wrong places and all of these things that happen?
Well, he's based on my husband, and I just kind of happened upon my husband as well. And his character is a different version of my husband. My husband's not a doctor, and he happens to be a doctor, a surgeon, and he is young and experiences his first patient loss and has a really hard time with that. And he sees a therapist. And the therapist suggests he works at the mortuary on the weekends to come to grips with the reality of death. and as something he's going to face a lot in his profession. And so that's how he ends up at the mortuary, and Casey runs into him from there.
Interesting twist in this book. And again, people seem to love it. I'm going to finish it. It's a fun read. It really is.
Yeah.
I'm normally reading things about aliens and UFO spacecraft and government cover-ups, but this is actually more fun. So for those of you who aren't into the other items, I recommend this book. I think you'll enjoy it. And based on its reviews, it's going to do well. What are some of the marketing techniques that you have done now? Have you done book signings? Are you going to different stores and really promoting it, or do you have the time for that?
I haven't done that yet. We're kind of starting by getting the word out, and we'll start doing book signings later. The more stores I talk to, the more I found out actually they don't do that as much, especially with e-books available and. The managers I've talked to at stores said they don't tend to do that so much anymore. I was pretty surprised.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear that too.
Yeah.
We have several interesting stores in our area. One is Pilgrim's Way. That's a supporter here at the station. We'll see what we can do to get your book over there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Need to get it out. You need to have it in many different places. And
yeah.
I think anything that you can do helps. Is there any kind of conspiracy that we can tie to this that might help?
conspiracy? No. There's some, you know, I write about some paranormal activities, if that's what you can call it, that I experienced in the mortuary. Just things that I couldn't quite explain, but were certainly happening.
So you put that in the book. I just haven't come across it yet.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that part, actually. Maybe give us an example.
Well, when I was living in the mortuary, there were frequently shadows that I would catch out of the corner of my eye in the mirrors, or, you know, shadows passing by in the garage on the hearse, or, you know, sounds that you just can't explain because you're the only one living there. Just things like that, and it was pretty regular. You just kind of grew accustomed to it.
Have you ever heard the term shadow people?
No, I haven't.
Go online. It's there.
Shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's very likely what you saw.
Yeah. Well, for a while, I had a hard time even coming out of our apartment. Our apartment was right off of the hallway across from the embalming room. So it took me a while to ease my way out.
Got it. Well, you can imagine that when souls are leaving bodies, if there's a little glitch or they stick around a little too long, it could get kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Any other stories that... Boy, I'm having like a deja vu, like we've already had this conversation. That is weird. Any other stories along those lines? So you were actually somewhat afraid to come out of your room in the beginning, and then in doing so, you kind of got used to these occurrences and just kind of accepted them?
Yeah, you can't explain them. Over time, they became less threatening to me. They were still frightening, but you do grow accustomed to them. And, you know, once I had worked in the embalming room and had been around the bodies, it's very, very apparent that there is nothing there. So that fear went away.
Nothing there that you could put your finger on.
Nothing that you can put your finger on. They do feel very, very empty.
Well, what are your personal beliefs of the hereafter?
Well, I am a Christian. I was raised in the Christian faith. I kind of strayed away from that as a teenager and found my way back, actually, as this all happened. So this story is also about me kind of rediscovering faith in something bigger than me, and that really helped me through.
Christianity has kind of, as they say, a double-edged sword. What do you think of Onward Christian Soldier and Jesus? I mean, isn't that a contradiction?
There are so many contradictions that I've heard about Christianity. I do struggle with those contradictions as I hear them, but I try to just stick to the basics that I find in the Bible.
But isn't that also somewhat similar to seeing shadows, but then saying, well, there's nothing I can do about it, and accepting them, but without really accepting them?
Is what similar, kind of?
The dichotomy between Jesus and Christ, Christianity.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things about it that I just don't have the answers to, and...
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's very overwhelming when you go there, and it's just so much bigger than me, so I'm a pretty simple person.
Well, being simple, you still put out a book. That's something that not very many people do. What's the percentage of people that actually write a book, you think?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know, but I talk to a lot of people who say they have a book in them.
Yeah.
So... I think we all do. I think we all have a book in us and a story to tell. It's just a matter of whether or not we have the time to do it, or, you know, maybe the motivation to do it.
Well, what was the emphasis in your case?
That pushed me to do it?
Yes.
Oh, well, I've always had a love of literature. Even when I was a little girl, I would write stories. I just love stories, and I love telling stories. Even in my classroom, I'm a storyteller. So
it became natural for you then.
It did. It just became a part of who I am.
Well, I think you've got it. I really do. And your book reviews say so, too. So I congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
Well, we've got 15 minutes left, and you're welcome to stay and talk some more.
Okay. I'd love to.
Okay. So where are you going? Where are you headed right now? You got about 3 more weeks of school and you get summer vacation?
Oh, yes. I heard a joke the other week that what are the 3 things teachers love most? It's June, July, and August. Uh-huh. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. The end of the year is quite a rush.
Well, since you are in the teaching profession and California has the worst schools in the whole nation, why don't you give us a little political view of
going
on?
Well, help me out here. Give me some specific questions.
Well, we live in Monterey, Monterey Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
I was born and raised here. I coined this area the seat of the New World Order. Okay.
Oh, okay.
We have very influential people here. Leon Panetta, that's a name you're probably familiar with. In going back to the Nixon era, California, just prior to that, was one of the leading states. It was the leading state back in the 60s and early 70s. And then all of a sudden it turned around to be the worst state for education in the United States. Mm. I suggest to you that the reason that happened is that it was planned, that they made this happen, and that California is a test area to propagate programs, and that we're all programmed, pretty much.
So what is the motivation of doing that here?
Well, first of all, simply we can, learning how to do that, then you're able to implement that in other areas. I think that the real implication is to dumb down the citizens of the country and to take over a generation. You take over the kids, because the older folks kind of pass away. So you take over an entire species generationally by taking over the kids in one generation. And they can do that through the public education system. Scary, but...
frightening. That's something that, as a teacher, I fight against every day. My seniors just participated in an exam. I don't know all about it, but they participated in an exam. It was a state exam, and what they did with the results is they took the questions that the students were able to answer correctly, and they will now use that as those questions as the building of a new exit exam.
All right, our scores are going to go up again.
Yes, do you see how that works?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If you only ask questions they can answer, you will always have a passing score. So,
And if you say no often enough, they will always answer the questions you want correctly.
Yeah, it's pretty frightening. So I think for me, being a teacher it's just exhausting because you're fighting against the tide. And but I think it's noble work. I mean, I hope it's noble work. I hope it's not futile.
Well, here on the Monterey Peninsula, we have a crisis in the local Monterey Peninsula Unified School District. It started 11 years ago when it was found out that there was a little shenanigans going on the books were cooked.
Hmm.
Okay? And so we had the state come in and or the county and do a little auditing. And they eventually decided that the easy way out was to blame it on the dead guy. Okay? And that they could turn this around, and that everything would be okay. They would turn it around. They would hire a new superintendent to come in, and they would put it all on him. And so they did that. And I actually was on the superintendent search committee, and he was my third choice. If I was to have a third choice, I don't know. What do you want a third choice for? I want my first choice. But he was in the running, and that's who the board selected. And he was kind of the patsy to blame everything on when things didn't really turn around the way everybody said they were going to.
Right.
By that time, there was enough years that had gone by that the people that were really responsible got out of there scot-free, if you will. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So then, because he was so disliked for not having the ability to turn it around, we had to get the third person in there. Now, that woman came in, and she was pretty good-looking. A lot of people have... In fact, I hate to say what Ben said about her on the program, but anyway. She just recently, like within the last month, she and her administrative gurus all got increases in salary.
Oh, nice.
Nice, huh? During a time of recession and depression and... two illegal wars and more on the way. So the community is at least starting to rally around sending letters to the newspaper that are pretty derogatory to everything that's going on in the public educational system, especially from that top end.
Right.
So we do have a caller. Let's see who this is. Good evening. Who's this?
This is the great Ben.
Okay, Ben, I don't want you to say anything like you did last time about the superintendent, okay?
Well, whatever. Hey, I'm an honest cat, no matter how much it hurts. But I do love the truth. But I'm very inspired by this young lady. First, I was listening. I thought, oh no, a boring, going nowhere program. But you know what? With her life experience and with the difficulties she's had in her private life, she reminds me of my sixth grade teacher that I still remember to this day, who had a similar background, varied in medical and mortuary type stuff, and a very hard life at the end of World War II. Where she came through with her family. But one day we were all sitting in class, and this was an algebra class of all things. And we're getting ready for a test, and everybody's real quiet. And she kind of put her book down, and she looked up at us class, and she goes, you know what? I guess she said students or something. She goes, always remember that everything in life that you love, you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. And to this day, every time when I lost my parts of my family, and we've all lost people, that woman still is an inspiration. Because first of all, you teach your kids to be critical thinkers and to be honest and willing students. And with a young lady with this attitude of this guest you have tonight, I'm inspired. And I'm not no kid. So take that for what it's worth.
And I've met you, and you're not a no old kid.
Well, I'm a musician, so I live in the 60s permanently, which is cool with me. Music keeps me free.
But you're going to survive in my heart forever.
Well, music is what keeps me free, and the colors that you find in flowers. Never take those things for granted, because as you go through life, there's more less colors, and everything turns to a dull gray until we go to the beyond. I happen to believe, you believe in heaven or hell or whatever, but we all go to the same place. Our moms, our dads, I believe women return to their mothers and sons return to their fathers, but we all go to the same place. I don't really believe there's heaven or hell, But we can hope when Cheney and Bush get to that there is. Later.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the great Ben. That's how we address him here. So, do you have any other paranormal experiences personally?
Wow. Well, just, you know, I write a lot about the experiences in the mortuary.
So you research that, in other words, huh?
No, those were my experiences.
Oh, your own personal ones. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty chilling experiences at times. Can't really...
It lends credibility to the concept that the universe is nothing like we think it is.
No, nothing. I heard once a while back that we all see life through a straw hole, you know, the size of a straw hole, and there's just so much around us that we are not aware of, and yet we walk and talk and act as if we know it all, and we're just fooling ourselves, really.
I'd like to take that analogy and point out that astronomers look through straw holes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guys like me, we get a pair of night vision goggles, and we go outside, and we see UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking through a straw hole, you're not going to see a UFO.
Well, I think a lot of us might be more comfortable looking through a straw hole. You know, there's a lot maybe we don't want to know.
Well, there is that, but I think that we're, you know, we've been who we have been for a long time. Isn't it time that there be some growth? I think we're going to find out one way or the other anyway that we're going to have to grow pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know how to explain it any better than that. We talk about people waking people up. You know, you put it succinctly that, well, maybe people don't want to be woken up.
Yeah, I think it's frightening for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so are you saying that soon they'll be woken up, or that's what your goal is?
Both. I think that ultimately they're going to be woken up, and so I'm finding that all I'm doing is I'm facilitating the process. We all wake up at a different pace at a different time. I'm facilitating the process. That's all I can really hope to accomplish. Being in the right place at the right time is a pretty important function if you can get there.
Right.
So I you know, I got your email. I took a quick look at it. I thought, mm-hmm. Well, here's somebody on the planet at the same time as me. That's pretty bold. You're pretty bold for doing that. And what's your story? We all have one. It's just a matter of whether you have people that can listen. Now, Ben took the time to listen to what we were doing tonight.
I appreciate Ben doing
we
that.
We all do. And a lot of people won't. You do get people that just, you know, turn it off. Oh, this is a book review? No, not for me.
Yeah.
But it's an exceptional book by an exceptional person.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's very kind of you.
So what would you do with public education? I know that's totally off the subject, but you're a teacher. What would you do if you were up in our district, nobody knew you, and you could do whatever you wanted? What would you do? Kick the bums out? What would you do?
I just wring my hands all the time at the idea of lowering the standards, and I think it's about time we raise the standards. I've done that a lot with my students. I have the ability in one of my classes, it's an AP course, and I tell them if they're missing any assignments and they're not performing to the standard that's been set, they'll be moved out of the class. And you'd be surprised that when you set that standard, they are able to meet it.
Shape up or ship out, huh?
And they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
They can do it. And I think we're underestimating these kids. And
what we're doing to them is we're forcing them to live in mediocrity.
Right.
And it's a shame. It's actually that it's probably a sin. It would be a better word than a shame.
I would agree. I see their potential. I see it every day, and it's very frustrating. So I'm constantly lighting fires under them to get them going. And I'm actually really grateful. I feel like I get the opportunity to make a little bit of a difference each day, and And I also get to share my story with them. I get to tell them how I was able to overcome, but that it took a lot of hard work, and that I had to learn to lean on others and demand more of myself. And so I'm grateful that I get to do that, and I hope it leaves a mark. It sounds like Ben's teacher left a mark, so yeah. That gives me hope.
I have a third grade teacher. Interesting story. I wrote my first essay for her was I wanted to be an astronaut. She asked us all to tell what we wanted to do when we grew up. So I explained how astronauts would go out into zero gravity and rotate around the Earth, build a space station, and start from there to explore space. And her reply to that was to laugh. And I thought about that, and I thought, should my feelings be hurt? And I finally concluded that, well, you know, that's her perspective. Mine is that this is all going to happen in the near future. And so she didn't hurt my feelings, but I had to check my feelings.
Right.
So in 1976, I was in her class in 56. So 20 years later, I get a call, and she wants me to be the guest of her open house for the bicentennial. Everything in the room, from ceiling to floor, was all about space and space exploration. And then in 2007, I saw a notice that she had passed away, and I invited myself to her wake at her home and met her family. And I told them that I was a UFO researcher. And they looked at each other, and I asked, "Have you ever seen a UFO?" They looked at each other a little harder. And they invited me into the other room, sat me down, and they said, one by one, "Well, we have not, but our mother did." And a ship had landed on the property across the street, which was a vacant lot at that time, and the occupants telepathically asked her if she would like to go with them and be a teacher and be a part of their group aboard the ship. And she replied to them that she had family here and would like to continue and finish off her years here on the Earth.
Wow. Now that's a story to write.
Yeah. And you have it now, so you may.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we're at the end of the hour. It does go by pretty fast, even though
it
we stutter
did.
A few places. But I may finish your book and give you a call back and maybe even have you on again, because I think you're an exceptional writer.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll give your information out, or let me. What's the best way, you think, to order your book?
Well, it's available. You can go online and find it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Even Apple has it on the iBooks. And you can find a lot more information at my website, RebeccaFisherBooks.com.
Well,
you can
a lot of different ways. That's it.
Ways.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, my pleasure, and thank you. And that's it for tonight's show, folks. Next week, Saturday, got a very interesting program for you. Remember that we interviewed John Searle and his energy technology. So free energy next week. We'll have representatives from John Searle's group on the program to give us a good update.